Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of 4Panel, your weekly slice of comics and manga goodness here on the Geek Show Podcast Network. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Rob.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
So, how are we all doing today?
Oh, fine and dandy.
Like sour candy.
If you like.
It's an American thing, I suppose.
If you're a keen listener to Cinema Eclectica, you'll know that it's also an Italian thing, and there is a brand called Zotz, which is also, interestingly, the name of a film what we reviewed on Eclectica.
There is also a brand of sour candy called Camel Balls.
Yeah, but that's not really relevant.
No, I think Camel Balls is definitely the 4Panel wheelhouse.
It'd be an interesting superpower.
Actually, you know, forget the classy introduction I just did. I think from now on we should just be, welcome to 4Panel, it's Camel Balls.
So what are we talking about this week?
Comics, as every other week.
Were you expecting me to have something prepared?
I thought we were talking about something. If we're not talking about anything, can we talk about just how good the Spider-Verse movie is?
Well, you'll be talking about it on your own.
Oh, as much as I would love to. So you've kind of ruined it now, because it was just going to be a fun joke that, surprise, we're talking about Titans, but I just want to talk about Spider-Verse.
I'd rather talk about Titans.
Titans, we'll go with Titans.
Yeah, we'll go with Titans, because that came out. If you live in the UK like we do, it's finally out on Netflix. So you can see it through completely legal means, which is, of course, how we've all watched it, right, guys? Especially Mick?
Yes, absolutely.
And, yeah. Despite what the trailers might have you believe, it's pretty good, actually.
I was surprised. I'm pretty much a diehard fan of the original Teen Titans cartoon. I do consider that was one of the best presentations or representations of the Teen Titans. But Titans, I've got to say, has really got my interest.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit, I only really know the Teen Titans from the TV show.
I've tried watching that piece of crap Teen Titans Go, that meme bit heap of junk, and that just to me was whoever was the guy behind the thought process for Teen Titans Go just didn't seem to get that instead of trying to recapture the magic of the original Teen Titans cartoon, try and take it in a different direction. And I'm glad to see that they have. They've taken it in a darker direction, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is an offshoot of what they did with the Young Justice cartoon, because that was definitely a lot of the Teen Titans kind of maturing and going into a darker direction, stepping out from being a sidekick.
Yeah, well, plus I think I would say the main influences seem to be maybe a bit of the sort of Snyder DC films.
Yeah.
But also what I saw a lot of what I think they were trying to go for is moving in kind of like the Daredevil market.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
But without taking it as far distant as Daredevil did. Because for Daredevil, you've got three seasons of a superhero and he probably only wears his outfit, the familiar outfit, for about six episodes in the whole show. This, at least, keeps it familiar whilst also treading that darker
element.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the costumes, though.
Yes.
Because, like, Robin's costume is great.
Yes.
Beast Boy, I think they've done a good job of kind of adapting that costume into just casual clothes.
Yeah.
But it still kind of looks like the comic book look. Raven, I feel like they maybe could have done a bit more with.
But then she's still kind of nascent, isn't she? She's not really a Titan yet.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, none of them, except for Robin, are really kind of superheroes yet.
Yeah.
See, I'm hoping maybe like by the end of the second series, Raven has actually got some kind of outfit going on.
One of the things that I'm a bit puzzled by, some of the costuming, obviously Starfire still looks like whatever the hell that outfit is.
Yeah. See, that's my main complaint. Starfire, because it's not a costume.
No, it's more.
But it's also not clothes that any person would wear. She looks like she's dressed in fancy dress costumes.
Either that or she's a streetwalker.
But there is a background to that as you follow her storyline.
Yeah, but I feel like it's, for me, it's not even, it looks like she's a prostitute, because obviously at the start of the series, she was like trying to infiltrate the Russian mob as a prostitute or something, maybe. We don't know, because she's lost her memories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like even then, it just doesn't look like an outfit someone would wear, unless they were very specifically trying to say, what if I looked like the Teen Titans character Starfire, but also like a prostitute?
Yes, which I think is kind of a misunderstanding on someone's part because of the way that Starfire has been depicted in various iterations in the comics.
Yeah, although to be fair to them, like, that doesn't end up really being a big part of her character.
Well, it kind of is and it isn't, especially in the last couple of years when she split up with Dick and she's been...
I mean, on the show.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like, the fact that she's obviously been doing something related to pretending to be a prostitute, she's not, like, massively over-sexualized, I would say.
Yeah, she isn't. It's a bit of a weird one, is Starfire, this. I mean, I can understand the choice of actress. I can understand a lot of the choices about the way they're depicting Starfire in the Titan show.
I think I should point out, I basically love everything about Starfire except for her outfits.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same.
Later on in the series, they have kind of a sort of flashback where she's wearing what looks like a sort of purple turtleneck jumper or something. Let her wear that. That looked good.
Yeah. The thing that bugs me a little bit is, from that flashback, was that it was the Hulk's purple pants all over again. You know how every single time they try and do the Hulk, he's always got to have the purple pants on?
Yes. But as Immortal Hulk has taught us, Bruce Banner only owns purple pants for fashion reasons.
This is true. This is true.
Okay.
We're having a serious discussion about Titans. And
you're having a serious discussion about purple pants.
It was the related. Most important subject.
It was related to Starfire only wearing purple.
I do see you, but is it maybe doesn't make that much sense? Where does she even get all the outfits from?
See my point?
Well, she probably gets them from the same shop as Hulk gets his purple pants.
Maybe. So I guess kind of sort of running through the series chronologically, I feel like probably the first three or so episodes were maybe the weakest.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a lot of just slowly getting the team together.
Yeah. I mean, they were quite slow. But understandably so, as you say, it's getting the team together and they were in disparate locations, so kind of weaving a believable narrative that would get them all into the same location needed a kind of build-up.
I think, but, I guess for me, it's just what I like about Titans is the four of them as this kind of weird family unit.
Yeah.
And when it's not, it's a lot of Dick Grayson being a very mopey boy.
Yeah. The episodes that I feel let it down were the Hawk and Dove episodes.
Oh, that's what I was getting to.
Yeah.
I hate Hawk and Dove.
Does anyone actually like Hawk and Dove?
No, I do find it fun, the interpretation of, this is Hawk, he's the angry one who punches people. This is Dove, the pacifist one who, oh no, she's tearing out people's throats.
Yeah, that's kind of a bizarre thing to do with Dove, who is supposed to keep Hawk very calm so he doesn't tear people's throats out.
And the other thing that got me about Hawk and Dove, particularly in the first episode they were in, is we mentioned previously the costume side of Titans. And hers is the one that looks like they drafted in the costume designer from the early Power Rangers series.
It does look quite Power Rangers.
It's like they found a leftover one and a leftover Power Rangers outfit and stuck some really unrealistic looking feathers. It was like my first cosplay, the outfit.
Yeah. It's also, not to be too nitpicky, but where are they supposed to got those costumes? Because like later on when it's their origin story, Which, incidentally, a fun thing I found out is that I really don't care about what Hawk and Dove's origin story is.
Mm. Especially when it's such a standalone episode. I mean, it actually... You've got the backdoor pilot for Doom Patrol, but at least it's weaved into the narrative. This is just like an episode from a completely different show that appears to have been tacked in.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so... Because literally, it's like episode 9 as well. It's like two episodes before the end of the series. They just go, hey, do you want to find out who these characters who appeared like once in episode 2? What their whole deal with? But yeah, anyway, my original point is that in that episode, like, Hawk in the original Dove's costume is just basically like football gear. Mm. They've spray painted like white and red and blue and white. And like, how did they, I don't know if I want to say upgraded, but changed that to like weird Power Rangers stuff.
They got better Taylor. They got better. They got a Taylor.
They got a Taylor.
No, they got a Taylor.
Okay, but from where? Because like, they live in a rundown apartment and just run around punching drug dealers.
Maybe they just Googled Taylor, superhero tailors, or cheapest superhero hero tailors in the city. They found someone who could do it for like $20.
I mean, I guess, because like, they do have a full-on superhero community.
Exactly. So you've got to have like a budget superhero tailors somewhere.
Maybe. Okay, fair enough, Hawk and Dove. You win that one.
Do you know
what? But you lose so many more for what Hawk's origin story is.
Oh, yes.
oh no, Titans. That's not the kind of plot line you can just casually trot out. I don't think I can even really say much more about it.
But you want to. You so want to.
I mean, I don't even know if I really want to say anything about it just so much as go, Also, the original Dove got ran over by a CGI truck off screen.
Do you know what annoyed me about that, right? She got run over by a truck off screen, and yet you had one of the main characters in Brooklyn Nine-Nine being hit.
If Gina Peretti can survive a bus.
Exactly.
Dove can survive a truck.
And they can put that on the screen as well, her being hit by the bus.
Yeah, I was such an obviously CGI truck.
One of the things that bugs me a little bit about the Titans themselves is Raven, in particular, I find a bit odd.
Well, I mean, she is a peculiar girl.
I know that. It's just the whole, you know, when she's doing the eye thing and you have all the weird veins and she looks like some kind of, I don't know, some goth's dream girl. Maybe that's how they're trying to depict her. I don't know. It just doesn't quite sit that well with me.
No, I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, that's just her using a weird dark magic powers.
I know, without really understanding them and fully manifesting them.
It just seems a bit too Japanese horror or Southeast Asian horror type thing.
Well, maybe that's where they took their inspiration from.
They probably did.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It's a fairly well-known spooky black magic trope.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. They did it really well in that TV show Carnival, which I recommend, even though there was only two seasons.
Yeah. There were two really good seasons, though.
Exactly.
You know, it's almost an art form how you always find a way to work Carnival into these episodes. I really enjoyed the Doom Patrol episode.
The Doom Patrol really episode good was good.
What I like about it is the fact that they've now decided to go ahead with that series and completely recast it, almost.
Yeah,
I think we were talking about this over the week. It's so weird, especially the Chief. He's gone from like a random German dude to Timothy Dalton.
Who will no doubt treat us to a random German accent. Or not.
Yeah, but it does seem weird to me because, like, surely it's DC making both series.
Mm.
So they could have just got the cast they wanted for Doom Patrol to do the Doom Patrol episode.
Yep.
Unless, of course, they'd already lined up the cast for the series, but they weren't available to do the filming. Could be a scheduling thing.
Well, maybe.
Can I just point out something? The costuming for Robot Man was so much better than the costuming for Red Tornado in Supergirl.
To fact, I think it's easier because Robot Man is supposed to look quite junky.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he looks good. Negative Man looks great. Elastigirl has like fun, weird face, melty stuff.
Yep.
And they live in a weird, creepy house.
And have dinner around a long table.
They do. That's basically everything I want in a TV show.
Exactly. Yeah.
But no, that was a lot of fun, that episode.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the point where Titan starts to really click. Because it's kind of where it says, hey, forget what you saw in the trailer. This is actually a very fun show.
Yeah. And it's there where it starts to gel. I think the tying in with the Doom Patrol, obviously you get the mentions from from Dick about Bruce, and you get the little flashbacks and stuff, and then you get Wonder Girl turning up.
Yes, she does. I really liked Wonder Girl.
Yeah. And it's when they start tying it into that larger universe that it really starts to feel like a comic book show and not just sort of trying to hit on a zeitgeist kind of supernatural series, which is what some of it feels like early on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So I think it was that. And I think probably my other favourite episode is maybe the Jason Todd one.
Yeah, because I thought, when he kind of announces himself, I was sort of sat there going, no. Are they trying to commit suicide with this series? Introducing one of the least popular characters in the comics.
I just love how he's such a little turd.
I know. And it was almost like they were embracing the fact that he was so unloved.
Well, do you know why they can use him now? Jason Todd's one of those weird characters from the Batman franchise. They hated him originally, which is why they voted to kill him. But then, years and years and years and years later, they got a look at Bruce's son, and then everybody collectively went, well, Jason wasn't that bad, really, compared to this little shit.
Yeah, Damian Wayne is the worst. And not in a fun, the worst way, like how Jason Todd is the worst.
Exactly, and that's why Jason Todd is getting more love now, because he's not Damian Wayne.
But yeah, and again, that's another episode where they kind of embraced a lot of the wackiness. Like, they had that whole bit where they'd knocked out the evil doctor dude and were just like dragging him around for half the episode. Just like casually walking through a safe house, just like dragging this guy behind them.
Yep.
Which reminded me a bit of kind of Dirk Gently, the Netflix one.
Yes.
Just in terms of being like quite dark, but also really goofy as well.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, really like the nuclear family as well.
Yes.
Because, like, I know Mick, you were the one who mentioned they were in this, and I thought, oh, that's a weird concept. I wonder why they're in the show. But I think it actually makes a lot of sense. Because, like, you've got the Titans, who are like this weird sort of family of outsiders that have just found each other, versus a team of supervillains who are literally like the ideal American family.
And have been built that way.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like the way that they just keep getting dads.
Yeah, just come on, kids, let's get you a new dad.
Do you know the
by which I mean kidnap a kind of replacement to becoming a super assassin.
The other thing it kind of reminded me of, that whole family bit, was you remember the Vision comic?
Yeah, it was quite like the Vision, which just that weird. They look like a perfect family, but
yeah,
they're like weird super people. It's also, I really appreciate it, because I think it would be very easy for the show to have just done some like generic, maybe Deathstroke type super soldier dude.
Yeah.
And I think it works so much better to make them actually something a bit quirky with some memorable traits.
I hope if they do recur, they introduce the entire nuclear family, because obviously in Titans you get to meet Dad, Mom, Biff, and Sis. I want to meet Brat and Dog as well.
Well, I mean, they could do, because I mean, I think it's okay to spoil this bit, because there is another certain dog coming to Titans.
Yes.
Superboy and Crypto the Superdog.
Yes.
Very excited for that.
I want them to do Crypto really well, but I'm very worried that it's not going to work.
I'm hoping that Crypto the Superdog is just the chance for them to then later introduce Ace the Bat Hound.
And Comet the Super Horse. You can turn into a centaur man and seduce Supergirl.
Yes.
comics are bad sometimes.
Because comics.
Hang on. So, my brain just almost shorted out there.
It actually sounded like it did short out fully.
It's the way things work in cycles, because in manga and anime now, there is a rising trend of monster people fetishism type thing. But comics got there first.
Comics always get there first.
Yeah, they do.
And then manga goes and draws it better.
All right. Probably one last sort of criticism I have is that the finale was a bit weird.
Yeah.
Which I found out is actually because that wasn't supposed to be the finale.
Ah, that would make sense.
Yeah, originally there were like 12 episodes planned for this series. But then DC decided, no, instead of doing this one as episode 12 of series 1, we're going to make that episode 1 of series 2.
Ah.
Well, I guess that kind of makes sense, because you are desperate to find out what the hell the answer to your question of, is.
Yeah, but it's a bit weird having the finale of Titans kind of just being a Dick Grayson story.
Yeah, but you do have a nice old-fashioned sort of Star Trek The Next Generation Best of Both Worlds Part 1 type end-of-season cliffhanger to be resolved.
That was a lot of words you said there, Mick.
I know. I nearly ran out of words at one point, but I rallied towards the end there.
Well, well done you. Also, I think they maybe overdo it a bit with this idea of not showing Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of those really poor shots of the Joker in Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Where you only ever saw the back of a head or a silhouette.
Yeah, and like I get the idea of him being like this sort of distant, mysterious figure. But when it gets to the point where, like, him and Dick are literally in the same room together, but the lighting is strategically aligned as such that you can only see a batch silhouette.
Yeah.
It just gets a little bit silly.
I'll be honest, it's one of the things that I think the Justice League movie really did better. I mean, when Cyborg meets Batman for the first time, he's like, I didn't think you were real. And Batman replies, I am when it's necessary. That kind of thing where everybody thinks Batman is just some urban legend, and it's just assumed that that's the case.
See, that, I was just waiting for the twist where Dick yells out, damn it, Bruce, talk to me, flicks on a light switch and realises he's actually just been yelling at a coat rack for the past 15 minutes.
See, that would be amazing as a sight gag. It would be amazing.
All right, I think that's kind of everything I've got. Do you guys have any more thoughts on Titans?
I'm curious. Yes. Okay.
It wasn't in humans.
That is also a very good point.
Yes, it is. It's a very, very good point. I am definitely curious as to how they're going to progress from here. I have enjoyed this first season. And really, I was surprised at how much I did enjoy it. Like I said, I'm a diehard fan of the original cartoon series.
Yeah, I mean, it's a show I think has some problems, but...
Yeah.
I definitely want to see more of.
Yeah. And I think like some other of the Berlanti produced DC stuff, you know, Supergirl had problems in its first season, but then when it joined the rest of the DC universe on the CW, it's ironed them out and become a decent series on its own.
I'm not too sold on Supergirl and Flash and Arrow these days. I think part of it is because of Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, but you see, you don't have to weave Legends in. I mean, in this year's crossover, they just ditched Legends completely.
Yeah, I know, and I'll be honest, I enjoyed this year's crossover a lot more.
And yet this year's crossover was the biggest load of nonsense they've done.
I enjoyed it a lot more because it didn't have the Legends in.
But it was a more nonsense story, but because it didn't have the legends, it didn't seem as nonsense.
Yeah.
But that said, I think there's a place for the legends. I like the legends. It's a nice little, you know, you don't have to think too hard. It's an hour long. There's no real arc plot.
See, Legends of Tomorrow, for me, it's basically Time Bandits, but if the Time Bandits were trying to be good instead of just nick stuff and get rich. Yeah.
You're saying words as if you're trying to be negative, but a TV show about the Time Bandits being good doesn't sound that bad to me.
No, it doesn't sound bad to me either. Unfortunately, that's not what we got with Legends of Tomorrow.
It's exactly what we got. We just got them in a time ship and superpowers. I'm not saying it's the greatest TV show ever made. I mean, it's certainly not the greatest TV show about time travel ever made. But I think...
That's your personal bias coming out there, Mick.
But it is good-natured hokum. You can sit down. It's a good family show. You don't have to worry too much about all the angst and stuff. There's some knockabout slapstick in it. It's all right. It's never going to win any great awards.
It's just no Phil of the Future.
Oh, Mickey's having a dig at you there.
Anyway, before we take a break, I've got a fun Teen Titans-related game we can play.
Oh,
have you?
Go for it.
It is Who's That Titan?
Go on, then.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out the names of actual members of the Teen Titans, and you have to try and guess what their deal is.
What their power is, or just what their deal
just
is?
Just what their whole deal is.
Okay.
What's up with them? So, well, start with a fairly easy one. Little Barda.
She's the younger sister of Big Barda.
I mean, maybe. All we really know is that she's like Big Barda, only smaller.
So it could be that she's related, or she could be a tiny clone. It could, oh, God, no, I've just had an Austin Powers moment with Big Barda. Little Barda being a tiny clone of Big Barda.
Anyway. Next up, we have Young Frankenstein.
Oh, is this a teen that's been put together from bits of other teens, perhaps?
Or is it Gene Wilder just turned back and with Mel Brooks shouting in his ear?
If only. No, Young Frankenstein. It's just a teenage version of Frankenstein's monster.
My one was better, I think.
It was, although neither version can do putting on the Ritz. So next up, guys, tell me who Slagger is.
Slagger?
Somebody who says nasty things behind people's back.
I'm going to suggest that they have some kind of power that involves, like, lava-type molten rock.
Well,
throwing.
Maybe not lava-type molten rock, maybe what's left after you've thrown the lava.
Are you absolutely sure you don't want to go with he's actually just Ray Winstone running around in spandex going, you slag?
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure I don't want it to be that, because no one needs Ray Winstone in spandex.
No, they recast him, it's Danny Dyer now.
Okay, fine, you're right. Slagger is actually the original code name of Hotspot, who is basically the Human Torch, but Teen Titans, who I feel like would maybe be more popular if he wasn't about the 50th guy who is on fire superhero in the DC universe.
It seems like the most basic thing is, oh, let's set this character on fire and call them this name.
Yeah, I mean, there's at least like 28 different versions of Firestorm running around.
That's nuclear fission for you.
Those two who joined the Justice League, Ice and Fire?
Yeah, although turns out only one of those had fire-based powers.
Yeah.
And it might not be who you think.
Nope.
But actually, yes, it is. It's the fire one. The fire one does the fire powers.
Yeah, but in the year 3000, the ice one had somehow, everyone started calling her a goddess or something like that, and she had, like, really crazy ice powers. She could freeze planets and stuff.
Huh, weird.
Yeah.
Guys, who's Wildebeest?
He's a guy who looks like a wildebeest and has big horns. That one I know.
Oh, do you know Rob?
Well,
more importantly, does Rob know Mick?
Yes, Rob does know Mick.
But does he know who Wildebeest is?
I don't know. I didn't know there were so many different Titans teams until I tried to cheat on this game of yours.
Oh, there's so many.
I mean, you've got Teen Titans, Titans, New Teen Titans, Arsenal's Titans, who are, I believe, just operate in North London, Atom's Teen Titans.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Titans. At one point, the Atom got turned into a teenager.
Yes. Teen Titans post-graduation day, Titans West.
Yep.
Teen Titans again, Titans LA, Titans East, Deathstroke Titans.
Oh, yeah, Deathstroke has his own Teen Titans team because he wanted Teen Titans.
Titans Tomorrow?
Is it a bit weird that Deathstroke spends all this time hanging out with teenagers?
Is it a bit weird that he convinced the teenager to work with him and she kind of fell in love with him? Talking about Terra, very uncomfortable subject there.
Yeah.
And then we've got Kingdom Come and the Kingdom Titans.
Yeah. But Wildebeest, back to Wildebeest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out you are half right, Rob, because yes, Wildebeest is a giant hulking Wildebeest man some of the time.
Yes.
When he's not in his real form of baby Wildebeest.
What?
He's actually a toddler, a tiny Wildebeest toddler, inhabited by the soul, by one of the tainted souls of the magical dimensions of Azerath.
Yep.
Of course he is. What? Was this a 90s thing?
Actually, yes, it was. He was introduced in 1992.
Do you know how I remember him? The only reason I remember Wildebeest is because in the Teen Titans animated series, the early noughties one, or the mid-noughties one, the good one, right? In the last couple of episodes called Titans Together, the bad guys have basically captured all of the teenage heroes. Don't know what the adult heroes were doing during this time, but the bad guys have captured all the...
They were busy.
Yeah, the bad guys have captured them all, except for Beast Boy and a couple of others who were kind of useless. And Beast Boy takes the fight to them, and all the Teen Titans gather together. And Wildebeest is one of them.
I've just seen the most confusing description of a member of a superhero team that I have ever read. And I'm going to run this past you, Andrew, and as the Surge of Comics, I expect you, goddammit, to explain it to me. Phantasm. Danny Chase.
Oh, no, you found the... Phantasm is the one I deliberately left off because it's too confusing.
So, the history I've got here is Phantasm, briefly masqueraded as Phantasm, after having apparently died, later dying... to form a new Phantasm.
Yeah, Phantasm's a bit of an odd bird, I'll be honest.
Oh, it's some kind of bird. Right, I'll put that in my...
No.
What?
Basically, Phantasm is... Because it gets really confusing with Phantasm because you had Phantasm, the character, who was a character from Batman.
Oh, yeah, no, this is a completely different Phantasm to Batman Phantasm.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's a completely different Phantasm to Batman's Phantasm. Batman's Phantasm being a bad guy. But this Phantasm is completely different person. He apparently had parents who were international spies.
Yeah, basically, I think Phantasm was a kid named Danny Chase who, like, built himself kind of a weird ghost-type costume. But then he died. And then Raven went evil, but then good. And then freed a bunch of souls. And they all merged together, and they sort of became a new Phantasm.
See, the whole Phantasm idea really bugs me, because it seemed like they were trying to do a teenage version of the Spectre.
Probably.
Because they were doing teenage versions of every other character, and the Spectre was the only one left out. But it's the Spectre. He'd turn around and say, I don't need any teenage version of myself.
Anyway. Shall we get to the last round of Who's That Titan?
Go on then.
So, I mean, especially Mick, because I feel like Rob actually knows quite a few of these. Who's Gnark?
Gnark. You're saying Gnark to me. That's not a word, that's just a noise you made with your mouth. Gnark.
Yes, to spell out the name G-N-A-R-R-K.
Do you mean...
Gnark.
Do you mean John Gnark... The member of Titans.
You've got Wikipedia open.
Dead.
You've got
and
bloody
first Wikipedia. Appeared in Teen Titans number 33, May, June 1971.
You've got bloody Wikipedia open.
Well, of course I have. All these words he's saying are nonsense.
See, I'm legitimately disappointed because this was supposed to be the part where you confidently yell out that he's obviously a space alien or something.
See.
At which point I chastise your foolish assumptions and tell you he's actually a caveman.
Yeah, because they had like, California Man or Encino Man or whatever it was called, that Brendan Fraser one where they dig up a caveman, that comedy, alleged comedy with Pauly Shaw.
Gnark had a magic rock in his chest that gave him superpowers, but then the rock just ran out and he died.
Yeah, but the thing is, Gnark was trapped in ice. And that California Man movie, Brendan Fraser revives from a block of ice.
Does that mean Gnark was the first DC hero to get a proper movie adaptation? Actually, no, wait, no. It's okay, because Batman happened.
No, but the thing is, Gnark apparently...
Gnark got a movie before Wonder Woman.
Basically, yeah.
Gnark. We're gonna take a break while I kind of throw my arms in the air and mutter incomprehensibly, and then we'll be back to talk about some comics.
Cartoons! They're not just for kids anymore, except the ones that are actually for kids. They're for kids. If you liked that, then tune in to Keyframe for more scintillating insights about the world of animation. Part of the Geek Show's podcast network, we'll tell you whether it's as good as Ghibli or just plain giblets.
And welcome back, everyone. As promised, now we're going to talk about what we've been reading. So, guys, because I know one of you said he was going first, and I've immediately forgotten. Someone talk now.
Okay, that'll be me then. So the first title I'm going to review this week is published by Fantagraphics Books, and it's a one-man show called with Art and Words and Everything Else by Sergio Pontioni. And it's called Memorabilia. And it's delightful. It's one illustrator's loving homage to the people who got him into this industry in the first place. And it's kind of a biography of their comic book careers. And it's woven into this little sort of narrative where he's sort of acting as a sort of mentor to another sort of hopeful comic book writer and drawer. And it's one of those kind of, it's like the comic book equivalent of the old guy out of the Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi.
Okay.
Saying, you've got to work at this, you've got to learn how to do that, you've got to learn how to create a world and craft a world and all the rest of it and suck people into the world. And you've got to do it until you manage to get to the point where you can do this. And he summons the letter D out of thin air. And then as that letter D materializes, it takes us into the career and life of Steve Ditko. And takes us through a slightly surreal, fictionalized account of Steve Ditko's imagination and work and the legacy that he left to comics.
That sounds quite delightful.
It is, and it's lovely and whimsical. And then after D, we get a K for Jack Kirby, and we do that as well. And then we've got the same takes place for Wallace Wood, who I believe went on to do Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
Will Eisner, who is probably due some kind of award of some kind. I'm sure he'll get nominated for it anyway.
Maybe you'll win an Eisner one day.
And the beautiful thing about the Eisner one is that it shows someone turning up to the Eisner building, but the building is made up out of the word Eisner, which is quite a lovely little image.
That's fun, but also why isn't it?
And there's a nod to the spirit and the way that comics were back then. And then there's the fictionalized account of how Richard Corben discovered a molding substance that he used to create his 3D characters called Corbinite, and it's great. I mean, Sergio Poncioni exhibits the same level of imagination that his heroes have shared with the world, and it's like a love letter to comics.
Awesome.
And it is it's surreal and loving and touching and kind of factual as well, because there's a little biog of each of the comic book heroes at the back. So that's Memorabilia by Sergio Poncioni, and it's published by Fantagraphics Books. Buy it. Maybe.
Awesome. 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 Okay, so for me, I was
horrified they even are getting costumes. Literally just noticed that Mick shared a thing ages ago in the chat. They look good.
You're welcome.
And you talk about my delayed reactions, Mick.
In my defense, it wasn't so much a delayed reaction as I had a different tab open.
Anyway, I have Cloak and Dagger, Shades of Grey, which apparently is in print for the first time. And this is...
Marvel are doing that a lot recently, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I've had a few of these. This is written by Dennis Hopeless with pencils for... I mean, this collects issues 1 to 6 of Cloak and Dagger.
That's not a great name to have on the top of your CV, is it?
What?
Dennis Hopeless.
Yeah, well...
if you give me a sec...
That is his name, unfortunately. Anyway, pencils by...
No, it actually isn't, because I believe he changed his name quite recently.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he now goes by Dennis Hopeless Hallam.
Okay, well...
That makes it so much better.
In this, he's still called Dennis Hopeless. It's been printed with his name as Dennis Hopeless, so that's what I'm sticking to.
Yeah, well, I guess the idea is to maybe eventually phase out the Hopeless.
That sounds like a Tory policy from 1979.
Yeah.
Or 2019.
Yeah.
Well, they just recycle all the time anyway.
It could still be valid. We don't know. Anyway, it's got pencils for issues 1 to 4 and issue 6 by Dave Messina, and pencils on issue 5 were by Francesco Manna. Inkers for issues 1 to 4 and issue 6 were Elizabeth D'Amico, and issue 5 was Francesco Manna again. And colours by Giada Marchisio, and letters by VC's Travis Lanham. I'll be honest, this is a bit of an odd Cloak and Dagger story. Tyrone and Tandy have been friends since they first met each other and realised that they basically needed each other to survive and find who'd basically experimented on them, everything like that. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the two of them teamed up. One became Cloak, and he's basically a conduit to the Dark Force dimension. The other one, called Dagger, who basically can use the Light Force to, throw daggers of light at people and fight and do stuff like that. But this series starts off with Tandy and Tyrone in some kind of argument. They're at odds with each other, and they're not speaking to each other, even though Tyrone needs Tandy's light powers to keep the Dark Force at bay before it consumes him and thus the entire world / universe, because it's an entire frickin' dimension, right?
Yeah, bummer.
But they're not speaking to each other right now. Tandy is on a drugs bust with some cops, one of whom she may or may not be dating, I'm not sure. And then they find a dead body of a supervillainess type person who is basically a dried up corpse. She's basically a husk. And Tandy has...
Dried up corpse woman. Yeah, she's my favourite.
Yeah,
I think I went out with her in school.
Thing is, Tandy has seen this before. Tyrone has been keeping an eye on Tandy, not because he's stalking her, but because she's a bit of a loose cannon. Oh, that's how he's convincing himself anyway. But then when she finds the dried up corpse, she immediately thinks that Tyrone has killed this woman. And then you get to get this whole rigmarole of Tyrone doesn't understand why Tandy is angry with him. Tandy wants to know why Tyrone is killing people. She wonders, how do you accuse somebody of murder when they're the only person you've ever loved? Well, obviously, that can't be true, because you're in an argument with him and won't even hear his side. It's a bit weird because it seems like Dennis Hopeless is trying to write a good, strong female character but doesn't quite understand what makes a good, strong female character.
I mean, he does because he wrote Spider-Woman.
I know he does when it's Spider-Woman, but when it's Dagger, it doesn't quite work. Dagger and Cloak have this complicated relationship, very, very complicated relationship, and I can understand it's going to be easy to get wrong, and I think there are places where it does get it wrong a little bit. Not too much, but just enough for it to be a little bit annoying as you're reading this. The resolution of it, there is some catharsis at the end, but the person they're up against is a person from their past, and given how much I've read of Cloak and Dagger over the years, one thing I know is that Tandy and Tyrone are extremely close. They're, like, ridiculously close. They don't really have secrets from each other because they both relied on each other to survive. And having secrets from each other was a way to either get captured or killed. Maybe it's me missing out on loads of Cloak and Dagger development over the years. But I just didn't quite relate to this in the way that I've related to Cloak and Dagger stuff in the past. The artwork is all right. Issue 5 is a bit of an odd duck, though. I've got to say the artwork in Issue 5 is not my cup of tea. But in general, it's all right. I just couldn't relate to it as much as I've done with other Cloak and Dagger stuff, like I said.
Well, I guess at least it's all right.
Like I said, maybe I've missed out on a lot of development with Cloak and Dagger. Maybe I'm missing a whole bunch of stuff. I'll admit that, you know, and that's on me. I can't keep up to date with every single comic that's been released in the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there were some important Cloak and Dagger developments in, like, an ancillary spin-off series for an event that's already gone on for far too long and is yet still ongoing.
Yeah.
And they put out, like, 4 bloody miniseries all in one go, and you're supposed to read all of them, even though comics are so expensive now.
Yes, yes. Maybe that happened, and maybe all this backstory that I'm supposed to know going into this Cloak and Dagger series happened in that. I don't know, but I go into this expecting Cloak and Dagger to basically be kind of the same as they always were, and they're not. They're having a massive argument, which people do from time to time, but when the stakes for having that argument are the destruction of the world or reality or even yourself, then you kind of calm down quite quickly.
I don't know. I feel like that might make it worse. Because it's like, it's basically saying you're not allowed to have an argument. And no. I feel like that could maybe just make you resent things even more.
Well, I don't think it's saying that you're not allowed to have an argument. It's saying that you are allowed to have an argument, but if you have an argument, take a step back, try and figure out what the argument is about, and try and resolve it.
Can I talk about my thing now?
Yes.
No, we'd rather you talked about comics.
I mean, to be honest, I'd rather not. God damn it, you sons of bitches. Do a comics podcast, Andrew. It'll be fun. Get to read comics. Aren't comics fun?
Well, my comics have been fun. Have your comics been fun, Rob?
Well, I couldn't really relate to Cloak and Dagger, but the next one is more interesting.
All right. Just you then, Andrew, really.
I've been reading Hunt for Wolverine.
So it is about your thing, then?
It is about my thing.
Hunt for Wolverine? Is that like the Marvel equivalent of Where's Wally?
I mean, yes, in that both are deeply unsatisfying experiences. So Hunt for Wolverine comprises the Hunt for Wolverine issue 1, and then the Weapon Lost, Claws of a Killer, Adamantium Agenda, and Mystery in Madripoor miniseries.
And I actually don't think that's the complete set of miniseries.
Oh, no. This is all the setup for Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends, which leads into The Return of Wolverine.
See, when I first saw the title Hunt for Wolverine, I thought, well, that's a fairly easy thing to do because he's dead. But then I thought, no, this is comics. They won't keep him dead. They found a way to bring him from another dimension. What happens if he's alive again? But then this dimension's Wolverine meets the other dimension's Wolverine. Is everything going to get destroyed? What's going on?
I don't know. You have to wait for the next series, which is going to be Wolverine versus Old Man Logan. I hate comics. Comics are terrible. podcast over. This is the official end of the podcast.
Well, no, we've still got like other issues to do on this particular one, but
nope. Sorry, I hate Hunt for Wolverine so much that I'm pulling the plug on everything.
Okay, what's so bad about it? It can't be that bad, can it?
This is like over 40 quid's worth of comics in which nothing happens.
What?
It's four series, the gist of which is different teams go to look for Wolverine in a place. And guess what? He's not there.
What is this? Some weird comic book version of hide and seek?
Basically. So, to go through things. Hunt for Wolverine issue 1 itself, which is written by Charles Soule and is art by David Marquez and Paolo Sequeira, with colours by Rochelle Rosenberg and Ruth Redmond and inks by Walden Wong. That's quite fun, because it's basically about the X-Men fighting the Reavers, who are like all weird, janky cyborg dudes.
Yeah.
And basically they do that, only to find that Wolverine's body is missing. So they gotta go do some adventures. And I'm gonna go through these from the one I hated the most to, I guess, what I could charitably call my favourite. So, bottom of the pile is Weapon Lost, which is written by Charles Soule with art by Matteo Bufagni and colours by Jim Charlampidis. And it's basically about Daredevil, Misty Knight, some inhuman dude called Frank, and the X-Man Cypher just trying to find out where Wolverine's gone. And then
say an inhuman dude called Frank?
Yeah. Not all the inhumans have fancy names.
I just wondered if that was indicative of his superpower. He tells you what he really thinks.
That would be amazing.
Nope. He's got magic camera eyes. So anyway, like, they think they found Wolverine. But turns out it's not. It's a guy called Albert who's a robot clone of Wolverine. And they fight him and defeat him. And then like, oh, well, guess we don't know where Wolverine is. And like, there's even a bit where Deadpool says something along the lines of, well, we found some stuff out, so I guess we better just pass this back along to the X-Men. Which just, it feels like such a, well, this whole thing was a gigantic waste of time, wasn't it? Boy, I bet anyone who bought these issues would feel dumb.
Can I just ask, is this some weird X-Men version of how the Fantastic Four and literally everybody else, including Squirrel Girl and Moon Girl, keep finding Doombots everywhere?
Yeah, basically that, but with Wolverines. But yeah, it's just, the story's completely pointless. There's a really dumb side plot about like Cypher being addicted to the internet, which is just a bit silly. And it's like, it's treated as a really serious thing, even though it's incredibly cringy. And it's just like, Deadpool's not a guy that's like really connected to Wolverine in any way. So it's just, I feel like this whole thing exists because it's written by Charles Soule, who is also the guy who wrote Return of Wolverine and was writing the Daredevil series at the time. So that sucks. Next up, we have The Claws of a Killer.
Oh, I see what they've done there.
Written by Mariko Tamaki, with art by Butch Geis and Mac Chater. Inks by Cam Smith and Mac Chater, I guess, on the issues where he was doing the art. And colours by Dan Brown and John Boyd.
Can I just point something out very quickly? And this is going to piss off every single Wolverine diehard fan. Wolverine doesn't have claws. He has, basically, they're spurs. Because they come out from between his knuckles. Claws come out from the end of your fingers.
Thanks, Rob. That was a very important observation. That was definitely worth prolonging this torture.
I'm just saying spurs of a killer doesn't work as well as claws of a killer.
Anyway, Lady Deathstrike, Sabretooth, and Day can go to a town where maybe Wolverine is because they want to kill him, but turns out he's not there and actually a bunch of zombies are, and then Day can gets killed, but it's okay because he's going to get brought back to life and return to Wolverine. Done. It's just...
Next.
Yeah, that one's just... It's basically fine. It's just... What's the point? Next up, we have The Adamantium Agenda, which is written by Tom Taylor with art by R.B. Silver, inks by Adriano Di Benedetto and R.B. Silver on the first issue, and colors by Jesus Arbatov and Guru EFX. And this one, see, this one I almost like the central story because it's about like Iron Man, Spider-Man, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones, along with X-23, although this was at the time when she was Wolverine. It's kind of them teaming up, sort of like a new Avengers reunion, which is quite fun.
Okay.
And they basically end up fighting Mr. Sinister because he's got a bunch of superhero DNA in a hard drive, so they have to go blow that up. But it's just, it's another one where, again, it's basically them just going, oh yeah, we found out about this bad group who maybe have something to do with Wolverine's disappearance, but we're going to in no way follow this up. So we'll just pass it along to the X-Men.
See, that one sounds like something that could have been done just as a standalone story and have no relation to Wolverine at all.
Yeah, I feel like give me a new Avengers miniseries, which is about them kind of teaming up and having an adventure, and that would be fun. But also this series, the ending does something that really rustles my jimmies.
Okay.
Because, like I said, Laura Kinney, she's on the team for this. And it ends with this really random revelation. So to explain her backstory a bit, she's a clone of Wolverine.
Yeah.
And she was raised by a scientist called Sarah Kinney. That's, you know, where she got her name from. And, like, Sarah is very much a woman who Laura thinks of as a mother. And this series ends with Tony Stark saying, oh, by the way, I found your DNA data in the database. Turns out Sarah Kinney was actually your biological mother.
What's the point of that?
See, initially, that's what I just thought of. Well, what's the point? That doesn't add anything. But then there's been a lot of stuff online that's actually pointed out that's actually kind of even worse than that. Because it's basically treating the idea of saying, like, oh, turns out this woman was your biological mother as like the ultimate happy ending. And it's like saying, oh yeah, adopted families, they're never your real family.
Well, that's not right at all.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like it's probably not intentional, but it does really come off as saying, oh yeah, the fact that this woman like loved you unconditionally and raised you as her own is irrelevant. But it's the fact that you're biologically related makes her your real mother. And that's not good.
No, it's not.
No.
Anyway, the best one, I guess, is Mystery in Madripoor, which is written by Jim Zub with art by Tony Silas and Leonard Kirk, colours by Philippe Sobrero and Andrew Crosley. And it's basically like a bunch of Wolverine's gal pals going off to Madripoor to sort of basically see if Magneto knows anything, but he doesn't. And then they end up fighting Viper and they stop a missile launch. And then they just go back home. And I think it's kind of fun. Like maybe if this was a bit longer, because it's a nice team up between like a Storm, Psylocke, Rogue, Jubilee, Shadowcat, and Domino. And like, they're all cool characters. I like seeing them in an adventure together. And the art's really nice. But again, it's just this sense of, it just feels so perfunctory.
See, I loved your description of this when you said it's a bunch of Wolverine's gal pals because it made it seem like Wolverine was like their gay best friend.
Is he not, though?
He really is.
He definitely 100% is. It's just him and his boyfriend Scott Summers and their many female friends.
It really is.
That's canon X-Men and you can't convince me otherwise.
Oh, no. I'm going to have to go through and reinterpret all the X-Men movies now.
I mean, there's a reason why Logan and Scott are always at loggerheads. They never see eye to eye.
Exactly. It's the blistering sexual tension.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think if Mystery and Madripoor had been like the one thing, I would have kind of accepted that. But it's just this idea of having like four different miniseries all coming out at the same time in which essentially nothing happens except to reveal there's some organization called Soterra. They're a bit dodgy. They've maybe got Wolverine's body. I mean, that's literally a thing you can just set up in like the first issue of Return of Wolverine.
Yeah.
Or maybe just do, you know, they brought Cyclops back recently, and do you know how they did that?
How?
They had one comic where Cyclops appears at the end alive, and then another comic where he sort of shows up wandering about. And then the next comic, they said, okay, this is how Cyclops came back to life.
Can I just point out, with this Hood for Wolverine thing, do you know what they're basically doing? You remember when Batman had his back broken by Bane and Superman died? When Superman died, you had Funeral for a Friend and Reign of the Supermen. When Batman had his back broken, you had Night Quest and various things like that.
Yes, it's gone back to this just ridiculous bloat of superhero comics.
Yeah, for no reason at all.
I mean, it's also assuming that comics still somehow work in the olden days, where kids can like run into a shop with a pocket full of change and like buy everything on the racks.
Well,
comic book is like £2.50.
Yeah, not only that, they're assuming that Wolverine is still a big enough character to sell that many comics.
I'm done. I'm sick of this.
Isn't this the kind of marketing ploy that turns Marvel into, or well, either Marvel or DC, into a big burgeoning money pit?
No.
That eventually can't sustain itself, and then it retracts into itself, and you end up with 12 issues per month featuring the better-selling characters until they suddenly start building up and building up because people miss the fringe characters.
Nope.
It seems to go in a cycle.
It doesn't anymore because the movies have changed the entire ballgame.
They absolutely have not.
How do you mean?
I mean...
Oh, with the publishing side of things.
Yeah, no.
All right, with the publishing side of things, yeah.
Basically no impact on comic books themselves.
I thought they had. I thought comic book sales were up because of them.
No, not really. Mainly because comic books are an expensive and Byzantine mess of convolution.
I mean, with the problem with this sort of tactic, fundamentally, though, is that you're diluting things too much instead of keeping things nice and simple and to the point so readers can move on. Because right now, readers don't really have that much of an attention span. Anyway, we can talk about
again,
that.
As I keep harping on, it's not even so much attention span, it's just they don't have that much of a wallet.
Yeah, this is
true. This is it. I mean, it took me, best part of 2 years to finish collecting the Civil War II single issues. And I've got a relatively well-paid job.
Yeah.
No kids at home, so, you know, a reasonable amount of disposable income. And there were some of those issues that I struggled.
Yeah, and there's no reason why you should have struggled with them.
No.
Just blah, comics.
Anyway.
But then to your point about kids running into a newsagent's shop, how many of the actual comics on the newsstands these days are aimed at kids and pocket money?
Well, how many of the Marvel DC ones are aimed at kids? Virtually none. Well, Squirrel Girl, I suppose, can be read by children, and they've got this new Marvel Rising thing. I don't know what DC are doing.
It is an industry that's just becoming increasingly insular.
Yeah. Which is bizarre, given that the movies are making so much money.
Yeah. Who knows?
Comics, sort yourselves out.
Anyway, we may revisit this topic at some point on another show, guys. Because I think there is something there to talk about. So we'll leave it up to Andrew, the comic sage, to decide when and where that might be. But anyway...
What medication he wants to take before we start.
Yes, that as well. But anyway, we are at the end of the show. If you want to listen to any of our previous episodes or indeed any of the episodes on the Geek Show Podcast Network, then you can find them all on our website or Audioboom or whichever podcast provider you choose to use. They're also on iTunes as well. And if you head to our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, you can also find our Patreon, our shop, and various other things, reviews of all sorts of things. That's it from us this week. Until next week, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.
They don't even find Wolverine. Only half the... Well, I mean, two of them have... Well, no, I suppose three of them have a Wolverine and one of them has a ghost Wolverine. But no, No, actual. Not the Wolverine they're looking for.
Hold on. Is this a Star Wars crossover?
Maybe.
This is not the Wolverine they're looking for.
No, no, no. It's not the Wolverine they want. It's the Wolverine they need.
It's not the Wolverine you want. It's the Wolverine you deserve.
That would have been better if, like, it had just been weapon loss and they found the weird robot Wolverine dude and just go, yeah, good enough. Or if they just turned to Laura and said, you know what, you're a better Wolverine anyway, we'll just keep you.
Yeah, because she is. She really is.
It's so what if Logan's body is missing? It'll turn up at some point.
Yeah. I never understood that. They go gallivanting off for no reason just to find the body of somebody who... Well, he's got a healing factor and adamantium claws. What's the worst thing he could do?
I mean, get turned into a brainwashed assassin, basically.
Yeah, but he's still just killing one person. It's not like he's going to destroy half the planet, is it?
Well, yeah. Eventually, I guess he could.
Also, I feel like, as some people point out, it's the whole idea of Wolverine being like the ultimate terror against the X-Men if he ever went rogue. It's kind of a bit silly when you've got people like Magneto and Polaris on the team.
Yes.
They can literally just chuck him into space.
Magneto's proven that he can dismantle Wolverine easily on more than one occasion.
And yet Wolverine keeps coming back for more.
Which I'm pretty sure a fairly large number of the X-Men could take out Wolverine.
Well, let's put it this way. It's adamantium. It's a metal, which means it has a melting point. I'm sure somebody could basically melt his bones.
Anyway, you know what, guys? It's comics.
Yes, it is.
Forget it, Jake. It's Comics Town.